are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna do?
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say, Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi, Hotep family. Hope everything is well with you today. It is TGIF. That's right. Thank God it is Friday, especially for those who work during the week. They live for the weekend. Remember I said I was going to try to find a couple of them songs, you know, the OJs, Johnny Kemp. There's a few others, you know, that talk specifically about Friday. So the weekend's here. And so I hope that you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, need to do, should do, better do, can do, will do, and must do. And I hope that the weather is accommodating for you to do it. But if it isn't, you'll get it done. You got to get it done. Unless, of course, it was like a couple of weeks ago when if you're in the Carolinas, yeah, you couldn't get nothing done. In fact, the better move if you could do it, because some people couldn't do it, and that is evacuate. And, you know, even now, rivers haven't receded. Flooding is still very prominent. Homes are literally destroyed. Some people, when the water receded, excuse me, they were able to get rid of all of that drywall. Probably what I've seen, they like the part that wasn't bad, that's cut it in half, because you're going to attach other drywall and then, put some painter's tape and, you know, to make it look like it's one straight move and then paint over it and then bam, it's all good. It's all new. But some people, it has been underwater for so long that really there's nothing you can do. So I hope that you get a chance to do all the things that you should and better and must and will do. Appreciate it. Do it. Get it done. You are listening to African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, then you can always go to the archives at timeforanawakening.com. And when you see the red, black, and green line with Africa Imposed, click on that. There are some programs that are dated and titled on the homepage of Time for an Awakening Media. But on the right, there's the archives. You can click on that and go to the numbers that have been posted. And I know my good brother and friend, Brother Kwaku, is planning to pretty much put all of these on at one time or another, and we'll make them more available to you. You know, we're just, you know, trying to make it better. Trying to make it better. There are other programs here on Time for an Awakening Media. On Mondays, after my program, Monday evening, all times I'm going to give are Eastern times. Monday evening, Acres of Diamonds from 6 to 8. That's public affairs programming out of Philadelphia. Right after Acres of Diamonds, Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. on Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness, from 8 to 10. Today is Friday, and if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, that's right, brothers and sisters, it is time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Time for an awakening tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern. Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore. Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore from 10 a.m. to 12 noon tomorrow. And then Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., it ain't me, it's Sister PLC with her program, Revive, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern on Sunday. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m., once again, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And a number to call if you want to be a part of those programs and give your opinion, your perspective, your, you know, whatever questions, comment, or concern, you dial 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We buy black. We buy black.com. Check out WeBuyBlack.com on the internet because they have the largest online marketplace for American African-owned business, and you can get everything you need from American African-owned businesses at WeBuyBlack.com. They have a kiosk in the Greenbrier Mall here in Atlanta. They have laundry detergent produced by us, razors, toothbrushes, batteries, I don't know. You got sore shoulders and knees. They got a liniment there that's produced by us, deodorant. I mean, a whole array of products, and I'm quite sure more and more to come, because the whole idea is that whatever we need, we should produce. Whatever it is that we need, we should produce. Having a convention, the We Buy Black Convention is Friday, November 16th and Saturday, November 17th at the Cobb Galleria Mall. Cobb Galleria Mall in Cobb County, in the area of Atlanta, so to speak, at the Cobb Galleria Mall. We Buy Black. African-American bookstores, you know, I promote African-American bookstores, always have, and I always will, because I think there's nothing more important than to read. Read with comprehension and understanding. Read. You know, in fact, there is a saying in Islam, and I think I've said this times before, there's only one miracle in Islam, and somebody can rescue me if I'm wrong, and that miracle is when the Prophet Muhammad was, because he was a merchant, he would march his camels across the desert and sell his wares here, pick up other stuff and march them across the desert and sell his wares there and so forth. And on his journey, God revealed himself, Allah, or an angel, and told him to read. And he said, I cannot read. He said, read. He said, I cannot read. He said, read. And he began to read. And then, of course, you know that he had some scribes, and they translated the Quran, the Holy Quran, from his dictation. Read. So there's a bookstore here in Atlanta on Abernathy in the West End, at the Shrine of the Black Madonna. Not only do they have books, they have artwork, sculptures, paintings, clothing, furniture, a whole array of things. They also have the red, black, and green shoes, NASGAS, that you can purchase. If they don't have your size, you can get them to order it for you. Shrine of the Black Madonna. The other place is Meddu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall again. So when you go to We Buy Black and their kiosks, and you can go to the bookstore, which is right by the concessions and the food court, rather, by the food court. Medu Netcher. Medu, which means writing, and Netcher means God. The writing of the gods is what the Greeks called hieroglyphs. But it's called Medu Netcher. And so you can check them out. Any go in there for any book that you, if they don't have it, they'll order it and you'll have it. And believe me, they do a good job. I've done it. Another bookstore is in Lithonia. That is Black Dot, Black Dog Cultural Center and Bookstore, 6984 Main Street in Lithonia. The number to call is 404-519-8107. 404-519-8107. And there is light in the Black Dot. Yes, it is. And they also have the red, black, and green shoes. Brother Ankh sells them. And believe me, once again, if he doesn't have what you want, and he has those new ones, too. He has the new UNIA. They're white with the map of Africa, red, black, and green. Because all the other shoes were black. Now he has some white ones, and that's the UNIA. The ones I love is Nat Turner's. They're very comfortable. And I don't know, they're under $100, y'all. It's buy. Hell, I bought my grandson some shoes. Jimmy, cost me $200. I was like, you got $200 for some tennis shoes. But the young man was doing good, and so I promised him. So, and my other grandson was here. I almost spent over $300-some on almost $400. Definitely over $350. Wow. For shoes. I tell you. So, check out that. Also, too, they have the athletic wear, the Afroletics, AFR-LETICS.com. Check them out. They're tank tops as well as V-necks, and they, instead of having NBA teams or Major League Baseball teams or any football teams, they have our team, the Dogon Starseed. They had Ruse, the Moors, the Olmecs, the Zulus. Check them out. Ulu, us lifting us. Good broadcast last night. They broadcast every Thursday night. You need to check them out. Check out Ulu. Check out the broadcast every Thursday night. And the number to call, where's my number at? Sometimes, you know, you got stuff hanging around here and you kind of lose your bearings. And where is it at here? So I got it. I'll go on a search. Find my stuff. Man, I tell you. Well, I'm going to give you the number because I can't find it here. And it's a number that we should have, Us Lifting Us, the radio broadcast every Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern. The number to call is 929-477-2789. 929-477-2789. Every Thursday night is Us Lifting Us from 9. It's about an hour program, and Sister Nanana was the host, and Brother Shabaka was the guest, and they said, can a cooperative model work for Pan-Africanism? And, of course, unequivocally, undeniably, yes, that model can work. And it will work. In fact, we're also part of the Pan-African program that's being is being formulated for next year. In fact, this year, in December, they're going to have a prelude in Accra, Ghana. I'm just really hopeful that the seriousness of what needs to happen happens, you know, and people and countries and diplomats and presidents and whoever all get on board, because this is what must happen for the survival of African people. We must, just like Dr. Clark said, we must embrace a dynamic Pan-Africanism that is spiritual, technical, and cultural. That is spiritual, not religious, spiritual, technical, the technology of today. And its future of tomorrow. And its culture. It is us. African culture. modified and infused with Americans, American Africans, Caribbean Africans, Africans from the diaspora, Africans on the continent coming together and formulating and working with and for one another.
It's got to happen.
Ulu. I said a good broadcast last night, and that's us lifting us. I venture to say, brothers and sisters, why there are not more, maybe they haven't heard about it. We need to maybe push and promote it more. Somebody said, what else can we do? We're on all the forums. What else can we do? We'll continue to do it. I'll continue to voice it from this particular platform. That's for sure. Us Lifting Us. Check them out, usliftingus.com. The concept of Us Lifting Us is bringing our resources together to do for ourselves. We wanted to do something practical, because a lot of times we talk about it and people say, well, what y'all really doing? Y'all just talking. Well, we developed the Cafe Ulu. Cafe Ulu is here in Atlanta. The address is 2036 Sylvan Road in the Sylvan Plaza. It's open Monday through Friday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Saturday and Sunday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., and we specialize in coffee. Coffee started in Ethiopia, so we have Ethiopian, Tanzanian, Kenyan, and Cameroonian, as well as other coffee brands. I think we got Brazilian as well as Panamanian. We also have loose teas. Everything that we sell at Cafe Ulu is produced by us. Everything we sell. Check out the website, Cafe Ulu, CafeUlu.com, CafeUlu.com. When you go on the website, order some coffee. My favorite, if you've listened to this program, you would know it is the Cameroon Boyo. The Cameroonian Boyo. That's a delicious coffee. Very good coffee. And I drink coffee black. So, yeah, I'm telling you, it's outstanding. We also have other products there sold by. We have Symphony Potato Chips, a brother and his two daughters distribute those chips, are made by us. Also, we have drinks. One of the drinks is Ambrosia. My good brother and friend, Brother Novak Young, he was on a program about a month ago talking about his product, how he developed it, the product's ingredients. Some of the ingredients are hibiscus, turmeric, ginger. It's a good vitality drink, a good health drink. It is delicious. Ambrosia. For inquiries about Ambrosia, you can dial 678-508-7254, 678-508-7254, and you can talk to Brother Novak Young. Or go on his website, Complete One Beauty, CompleteOneBeauty.com. AfricaForTheAfricans.org, AfricaForTheAfricans.org. My good brother, Bomani Tayembe, tried to get him on the phone the other day to see if that conference call is still happening on Sunday. I don't know. But he was having a conference call every Sunday from 7. Not every Sunday. I shouldn't say that because I don't know. But it was one Sunday. He gave me the information that it was from 7 to 8 to talk about the trip upcoming in November, November 16th through the 26th. And at the time I talked to him a few weeks ago, there were still spaces available for you or you and others and so forth. For less than $3,000 to Accra, Ghana, to Ghana. You would go to Accra, spend 3 days. You would go to Kumasi, spend 3 days. You would go back to Cape Coast to return to Accra to fly back here to the States. And the $2,950 cost is inclusive in terms of airfare from Atlanta. You leave out of New York to Accra, Ghana, and then, of course, you will return the same way by air. But while you're there, that's transportation and lodging and meals, two meals. So I think it's a well worth the trip. Check him out. Contact Brother Bomani Tayembe at 404-931-9422. 404-931-9429. But if you want to check out some photos from the previous trips, facebook.com/Bomani, B-O-M-A-N-I, B-O-M-A-N-I, Bomani, facebook.com for photos. You want videos? You want to see what was happening? You know, see how they went from there to there and seen this and that? YouTube.com/Bomani 2007, Bomani 2007, and check it out. It's a great trip. I hope that some of you take advantage of that. Ha! Today, we're going to talk about a subject that is very hard for a lot of us to talk about. Because number one, we don't understand it, and that's racism. Neely Fuller, who worked with Dr. Francis Cress Welsing, said, if you do not understand, and as you know, there is no such thing as race. There isn't. There is no such thing as race. Race is a human construct. Europeans, Caucasians, came up with this concept of race. You can trace that to Johann Blumenbach or Carol Linnaeus. They're the ones that come up with this concept of race. Giving themselves the top position with everybody else at a lower position with us at the lowest position. They want to believe that Caucasians are the most highly developed humans. They're the most highly developed humans. So there's no such thing. And so, but Neely Fuller says, but if you do not understand that, everything else you think you understand will only confuse you. And I maintain that we are so confused that we're confused in our confusion, and that's how confused we are, because we don't understand what these folks have developed and what they have implemented and imposed on the world and how it has put us in this position. Because of what Caucasians have done, the world hates us. We have no friends. And this is recent. This is not, some people in Caucasians would love us to believe that this was the beginning of time, the beginning of human history. This is something that was basically ordained by them. No, this is recent. The imposition of European culture, because see, there is no racism. There's no race. It's culture. It's culture. They impose their culture on the world. When they started to fall in Europe and went into what they want to call a dark age, a medieval age, when there was no information going on in Europe while things were happening elsewhere, Europeans finally came out of that dark age, so to speak, because the only light that was happening in Europe was in the western part of Europe or the far western part of Asia, because, you know, that's the arrogance of Europeans to call where they live in Europe a continent, using the Caucasus Mountains, Caucasians, using the Caucasus Mountains has a mountain range that divides the western part of Asia against the eastern part, the vast majority of land part of Asia. So that western part of Asia is now the European continent. By nobody's definition is Europe a continent. But because of arrogance, because of the perceived or the perception of their superiority, they said it's a continent. I say it's a continent. And what I say goes, because I know everything, you know nothing. So race, they devised this concept in looking at different Caucasoid, Negroid, and Mongoloid, and there's many other subgroups and so forth. This, you know, you can do the research yourself, you know. They came up with this concept of race, giving themselves the top position with everybody else at a lower position, with us at the lowest position. And look what it has done to us globally. Look how it has made us feel about ourselves. Look how we look at one another. Race. Yeah. No such thing as race. There are cultures. And Europeans, after they came out of that dark age, that medieval age, they kicked the Moors and Sephardic Jews out of Spain. Probably started claiming all the things that they did bring into Europe, the organizational skills, the educational skills. I mean, what the Moors did was phenomenal. Kicked them out. Then Martel and Charlemagne and all the other Europeans got together and said, we made war amongst ourselves, but we're going to come together on those who are outside of us. And I think that when they made that particular move to go venture out, just like Marco Polo goes to China, comes back with pasta. People think that spaghetti, because Marco Polo was Italian. People think that spaghetti and pasta is Italian, but it is Chinese. It's like people think that rice is Chinese, but rice is African, the origins of them. But what they came back, that Chinese used for celebration, was firecrackers, and they came back with gunpowder, or developed gunpowder, which helped facilitate their rise because they developed superior weaponry. And one thing I've always said and will continue to say, there's one thing about Europeans. They always found a better way to kill and torture and maim and destroy. They've always found a better way. You can look at that from their history. Looking at their history. And see, and that's why we don't understand these dynamics, because we fail to look at them historically. And we believe that they are human like us. And so therefore, you know, they will be sympathetic to human suffering. No, they're the cause of human suffering. They're the cause of this unequal world that we live in. It, you know, when I see what's interesting about Trump is that he's that old school arrogance of the European, as opposed to the ones that know that in today's world, you got to be a little bit more diplomatic. He is not that. And so that's why they laughed at him. That's why they laughed at him the other day when he was addressing the United Nations and boasting that what he and his administration have done through all this corruption, all the things that is more, I have done more in my almost 2 years than all other administrations previous. The arrogance, the false arrogance of Europeans. And that's what we're going to deal with today. Because we don't understand it. We don't understand what we're operating. And we clearly don't understand there is nothing that we can do. Europeans suffer from cognitive dissonance. When they came out of that dark age, that medieval age, and they band together, they had the idea of European supremacy. And they went around the world claiming everybody's stuff in the name of and imposing their culture, destroying the cultures they encountered and imposing their culture. There's no such thing as race. It's cultures. And unfortunately, we don't understand that. And so we keep wanting to be a part of the Europeans' culture. We don't understand where we are in that culture. It is by design that we'll always be at the damn bottom. And we will never be respected in their culture. Oh, yeah, there's some perceptions. There's that illusion of inclusion that they want to give you so you can continue to strive and not be independent, not be self-determining, not be liberated, not be sovereign. They'll continue to do that to give you the idea that, hey, you know, you too can be a part. No, you cannot. They suffer from cognitive dissonance. They believe that they are superior. And even though there is plethora of information saying otherwise, they dismiss it, they ignore it, and they go on as their business as usual. They don't want to hear it. They don't want to hear that fact. And they continue to operate in that manner. The only thing that checks them is for us to embrace our culture, to reestablish who we are as African people on the continent and globally. It's the only thing. That's why when Francis Chris Welsing, who was also working with Brother Neely Fuller, when she, in fact, I remember seeing, and I think she mentioned this at the presentation she did here in Atlanta some months before she passed. And she mentioned the fact that she was in her kitchen and it came to her, you know, why Caucasians had to do this. That they, as they began to venture out and take people's stuff and had intimate relationships with the women they encountered, rape. Let me take a sidebar here to talk about this for a second. I'm going to get back to that. Here's a sidebar. Europeans, because of their human development, the eminent Dr. Sheikh Anshar Jop pointed this out in his two-cradle theory of human development. Because of their environment, their harsh, cold, ungiving environment, caused a development within them to be very hardcore patriarchal and very dominant, very fearful of anything outside of them, xenophobic, very hardcore male dominant. And they were females. They acquiesced. They gave in. Why? How could they not? Because it's dark out there. It's cold out there. There are animals out there. I need the protection of this brute. And he treated females as such, as a property, just like he treated everything else. Their human development has no empathy, no sympathy, no caring for others. Racism, as she said, is in everything they do, is in all areas of people activity. It is in everything they do. Entertainment, sports, education, politics, sex, war, law, whatever. All areas of people activity is geared towards their benefit at the expense of all others. They developed this concept, kicking everybody else off the world stage and putting themselves up on it.
And that attitude has been on display this past few days with this hearing and the conviction of Bill Cosby for what he did and Brett Kavanaugh for what he did. But you'll always see the contradictions and the disparate treatment of us versus them. This is theirs, not ours. This is theirs. And I know so badly because of how we've been trained, we want to be a part of theirs. In fact, we don't even want to try to develop something of our own. We don't want to be independent, self-determining, liberated, or sovereign, because what we believe, because of their imposing their culture on us, that is ours is inferior. Ours is no good. What they have is best, and we want to be a part of it. Please, please, please let me share with you. And so we suffer because of it. Because of that human development. The selfish, greedy nature that Europeans have is because of that human development in that coming out of that ice age, that in the medieval age, all of it. They're sexist. They're racist. They're xenophobic. They're mean-spirited and hateful. They suffer from cognitive dissonance. And what we're going to get into a bit later, European or Caucasian fragility. They're fragile. They don't want to hear how evil they are. They don't want to hear about what they have done to other cultures, other human beings, and how they manipulate the world through the languages that they have and the things that they have done. Have they imposed it upon the world? You can't have a United Nations and unity in the world when the main people on the world are Europeans, because it's not in them. It is not part of their human development to be empathetic and sympathetic and caring towards others. They don't want to share. They're selfish. They're greedy. They are takers. They're underminers. They're supplanters. And yet we continue to beg them, please. And then we celebrate. Just recently I saw another thing where we're all celebrating the fact that this happened, you know, as a milestone or whatever that might be. These American African men or women achieved this, that, or the other. All in the comparison to Caucasians. You know, you can join this conversation. I know I go on these rants on Friday a lot of times, because I'm trying and I'll continue to try. I'll give it my best effort. I'll go to my grave knowing that I tried my best to do all I can do to raise and elevate the consciousness of African people, to make us believe in ourselves when we've been trained not to, to make us love ourselves when we've been trained not to, to make us embrace who we are historically, culturally, continuing the work of all those other great men and women of our people who consistently told us, many of these people that we don't know, because a lot of us don't want to know. That saying, if we knew better, we'd do better. But no, because if you know better, your behavior has to change. A lot of us don't want to change. And I'm talking about a spectrum of us. I'm not talking about just us who are at the lower economic rung, which is the majority of us. I'm talking about those Negroes so-called above us on that economic ladder. They sure in the hell don't want to change because of the benefit that they have in Caucasian's world. Even those of us here in Atlanta, I've mentioned this many times. Atlanta is the whitest, has the whitest income gap of our people. Where those of us who have.
This call is being recorded.
Of those of us who have and those of us who don't. It is the whitest. And we don't have a damn supermarket. I think there's a few auto dealerships because we drive cars, and there's a couple, I think, that even have a Mercedes or another luxury car dealer. I ain't talking about that. I'm talking about the things that sustain us. There are cul-de-sacs, subdivisions, and other areas of this in and around the city, other counties, where when you go there, they're beautiful. Manicured lawns, beautiful aesthetics. I'm quite sure the interiors are immaculate. Beautiful homes. And probably in that area, it's all us. So I couldn't tell somebody how bad the situation is for us when you living like that. Because number one, you are trained. You are trained to look at yourself individually. That's why they try to perpetuate the idea that America is a meritocracy. You're judged individually. No, you are not. And even those who are living in those beautiful homes, in those subdivisions, cul-de-sacs, and gated communities, your ass will suffer too. We have a caller. Let me take a call. 602. Good morning.
Good morning, Brother Orson.
Good morning. Good morning, Brother Marcus.
Yes, brother. You know, even though they live in those cul-de-sacs, that's debt they carry, you know. That's all debt, that mortgage they carry.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
All debt.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
If they lose that job, they be out in the street.
Yeah.
You see? So, you know, and I doubt we are going to replicate the Tulsa, Oklahoma, the Rosewood, the Asheville in North Carolina.
Right.
You know, there was another prominent place that got destroyed by them crackers.
Right.
You know?
Right.
We're not going to replicate that again in America. Because
right.
These people are going to make sure that we don't replicate that. You know? And, you know, there is so much dysfunction, brother. You know, I mean, it's, you know, the black man against the black woman, the woman against the man, it's terrible. But what we see happening now in America and the Bill Cosby situation that's happened and what's happening, that's going to work in our benefit.
Right.
Because our people realizing now that, you know what, there is no protection for you. If they could do that to Cosby, who was one of their biggest flunky, you know?
Mm.
You heard now that even Russell Simmons, he done sold off all his assets and got out of the country.
Is See, that right? Can, I didn't know that.
Yes, because, you know, they were coming for him too. So he saw the handwriting on the wall. He sold everything, liquidated everything, and they say he's someplace in Bali. You know, some place that has no extradition treaty where they can, put him in handcuffs and bring him back. You see? So there is no protection for our people. So all this is doing, it's going to be working in our benefit as nationalists. You see? Because there is no solution here for our people.
Well, you know, Marcus, I say the same thing. That's why... You know, to me, go ahead and approve Kavanaugh and make the court, the Supreme Court of the United States, for a number of decades, hardcore conservative. Go ahead and do it. Go ahead and do all the other things, because hopefully it will tell our people you have. You are always under this illusion of your inclusion here, but you have no place here in this new America.
Definitely not.
You have no place except for at the feet of these Europeans. That's the only place that you have to do their bidding, to do their work. And if they ain't no work for you to do, you might be eliminated.
To be a flunky.
That's right.
A flunky junkie. Hooked on being a flunky. You know what I'm saying?
So, yeah.
You know, and they're gonna approve that guy.
Yeah.
Because they realize that their population is dwindling. You see, they have to cut that abortion right there, you know, because their women are, you know, their women ain't thinking about having no babies. You know, they want careers. They are competing with the white man.
Right.
So he's going to have to find some way to curb her, you see? You know, so, I mean, but look, he took her out of the cave, and look what she's doing to him. So, you know, that's the issue. And a lot of our women, they jumping on the bandwagon too with the white woman, not realizing what's going on.
Yeah.
But they're going to approve him, you see, because they realize that their population is dwindling and they have to do something to increase their population. So they go, you know, the white man, he going to go the hard line, you know.
Yeah.
But as I said, it's all working in our benefit as nationalists. All we got to do is point. And I say, see, look for yourself, you know. You ain't got to believe me. Just look what's taking
exactly.
place.
Well, a lot anyway, of us, but you know, Marcus, a lot of us don't want to deal with that hard reality of European dominance, and because we want to be a part of it. We don't want to face the fact that these crackers have been doing everything in the last number of years to eliminate us. Yes, there's the perception of us, in, like here in Atlanta particularly, because, you know, we're in all the different counties, we're in county government and this and that, but it really, in the final analysis, don't mean a damn thing. Because
don't mean nothing.
No,
you're
because
right.
We really ain't running nothing.
Exactly. It's just a figurehead. They just, you know, and it's just it is similar what's going on in Africa and the Caribbean too. They got flunkies.
Yeah.
They got these black flunkies there, you know, and they ain't running nothing. The IMF, the World Bank, they who run the show.
That's right.
They who come in and tell us, look, you better do this, 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 and this in your society, or else you ain't going to get no loan, or you ain't going to get... But they're walking on their natural resources, dear brother. They're walking in Africa, they're walking on diamonds, they're walking on gold.
Yes.
And so we're doing things backwards. You know, we have the natural resources there. Why the hell you even got to go to the damn World Bank?
Yeah.
You know, why you got to go to the IMF? But
you know,
we are out of our minds.
We are out of our minds. And so what we're trying to do on this program, as we say all the time, is to reclaim and recapture and restore the African mind.
You thank know. You, good brother.
Oh yeah.
Thank
that's why I do this. That's my contribution to the elevation of the consciousness of African people, that every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for these 2 hours. If you want to know more about yourself and have the pride and dignity that you should have as an African person, here's where you got to come. I'm not the sole voice on this. No, I'm just a vehicle trying to disseminate this information to make us understand how important it is us to purge ourselves of the ignorance, purge ourselves of all the distrust and all of the negative things that have been imposed upon us. To, so to speak, to release that vice grip that the cracker has on our minds, you know? And if you understand that, too, once that grip is set, you can't pull it apart. And that's what's happening right now. The damn thing is set. And many of our people are wilding in it. But if you want to release it, there's that knob. at the end of the handle that you can turn. And turning that knob is equivalent to acquiring knowledge of self, beginning to believe in ourselves, to love one another, trust one another, respect one another, be willing to work with one another. And the more you turn it, the more you are infused with that. And then finally you release it and you see the cracker for who and what he is. But you don't challenge the cracker because there ain't nothing, a damn thing you can do or say about him. You got to come within each other. You got to embrace one another. And support one another.
Thank you so much. You keep on keeping on. Good
All
brother.
Right. Thank you. Thank you, Brother Marcus. You have a blessed weekend. Okay?
You too, brother.
All right. Take peace care. To you. We're going to take a break. And when we come back from that break, we're going to get off into this subject of why it's so hard for Caucasians to, you know, to talk about racism, to talk about something that they created because they know how evil it is and how evil they are. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. It's Friday. So we'll be right back. Stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie. On Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This is Gun Shot Blast, and I'm back in the building. Ah. Hey, hey,
now don't you like that, if you like that, hey. Ready to fight back, ready to fight back, hey. But they don't like that, no they don't like that, the power be in my people and power strike back, yeah. Oh, they lied and they cheated, store the juice we believe in, yeah. If the crook was a cook, we never look, we just eat it, got us like paraplegics, frozen stiff and depleted, body bad by the waist, our history we repeat it, yeah, they don't like the Kennedys. Your public enemies, the program satanic, tapping into our energies. They want super soaker, call themselves black and noble. Their position is global, so our transition is vocal. It all start with the churches, killer bees be the workers. Missionaries, they carry the wickedness to usurpers. They all hate us and bait us, their name is educators. Religions intimidate us, so we worship and invade us. They agree to embed it, bloodline is pathetic. Loyalty to the royalty, second cousins are wedded. Guillotines to behead them, yes the queen has said it. Elohim's the legend, the way your sisters are ready. Now do you like that? Yeah, we like that. Ready to fight back? Ready to fight back. But they don't like that? No, they don't like that. The power be in my people and power strike back. Awaken, can't you feel the earth shaking? We arousing 1,144 acres. No, we ain't paper chasers, more like movers and shakers. Bringing the sentence with vengeance to Mother Earth on the cake. From niggas to niggas, from rednecks to wiggers. When they try to come get us, they using your public figures. Concentrated to campus, microchip is the samplers. Unity is the key, connecting all the bandanas. Your televisions and cameras, so don't switch to the box. Microphones in your home, whether you like it or not. No, we ain't overcoming, we just slumming and bumming. Ain't recognizing your third eye is your second coming. I know you like that, yeah, we like that. Ready to fight back, ready to fight back. But they don't like that, no they don't like that. The power be in my people and power strike back. Look for Houdini, I study Kundalini, raising up through my vertebrae till I seen the genie. So if your chakras are open, know that you are the chosen. 144,000 around, the spell has been broken.
Shot blast. Are you prepared to stand up for the liberation of your people?
I am.
Are you willing to fight against the wickedness and evil of this present day system?
I am.
Wait a minute, Shout Bless. We saved your people. We brought you over here from Africa. We gave you a new name, a new culture, a new language, a new religion, a new God. So what do you say to that?
Fuck you.
So power be in my people against the forces of evil. Got you looking for paradise, the wise of the needle. So as you look for Houdini, I study Kundalini. Rising up through my vertebrae till I see the genie. I know you like that, yeah, we like that. Ready to fight back, ready to fight back. But they don't like that, no they don't like that. So power be in my people and power strike back, yeah.
Fucking battered and bruised, man, we lost in confusion.
champ. Believe in the illusion, so no revolution could take place till you erase the false face that you embrace. Carrying loads of dead weight, we displace all over this earth, cursed with hate. Still bowing down to masters who burn and castrate. We so divine, spiritual slaves, deaf and blind, but intertwined. Can recognize your black signs. You think not, so we rock braids and twist knots. That's not ether, galaxy rays and equinox. The soul seeker, astro signs, we leave the clock. The age of the warriors only shifts and rise.
So you like that? Yeah, we like that. Ready to fight back? Ready to fight back. But they don't like that? No, they don't like that. The power be in my people and power strike back. Yeah,
so you like that?
Brothers and sisters,
like that. Ready to
it
fight
is definitely
back.
The time. Against us, they're trying to take us down. But you must realize if you tap into your energies that they tried to keep you from, the ancestors, they have another plan. I'm calling on the ancestors. The ancestors. Come on, come on, come on. That's black science.
Now, do you like that? Yeah, we like that. Ready to fight back, ready to fight back. But they don't like that. No, they don't like that. Yeah.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific. So check us out. Other programs on Time for an Awakening Media on Mondays. Acres of Diamonds from all times I'm going to give are Eastern times. Acres of Diamonds from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern. Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9 on Monday. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with your host, Dr. William Rogers, from 8 to 10. On Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC on Wednesdays from 8 to 10. On Fridays, Time for an Awakening at 8 p.m. On Fridays, 8 p.m. On Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. And then on Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., Revive with Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness. And then Sunday night, 7 p.m. on Sunday night, Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And, of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Brothers and sisters, this is a hard subject for Caucasians to talk about. It's a hard subject for us to talk about. Once again, Neely Fuller said, if you do not understand, you know, and I don't call it white supremacy. My good brother from across the pond, Brother Paul, says, no, they're not supreme. And I've been many brothers and sisters that I know of who refuse to say that they are superior. And I understand that. But what they are is extreme, and that's why I really appreciate Paul for saying that, giving you that. So what I say is European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege. Because there's only one form of racism, and that is European Caucasian. There's only one form. They came up with this idea of race, and they imposed it on the world. And when you want to confront them about it, they don't want to hear it. They sure in the hell don't want to hear it from us. And you know what? They don't want to hear it from them. They don't want to hear Tim Wise or Jane Elliott. When Jane Elliott was doing the blue-eyed, brown eyes thing, and she did that 30-some, 40-some years ago. It was on Phil Donahue. It was on Oprah's show. How long they been off the air? Phil Donahue, you've been off the air damn near 30 years. Tim Wise. I mean, none of them, I believe, want to deconstruct or dismantle European, Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege. They want to change it. They don't want to eliminate it and break it all the way down and start all over with a humane concept for human beings and a redistribution of wealth. Oh, not even poor crackers will talk about redistribution of wealth. And they sure in hell don't want to talk about reparations for what they have done to us. And we're so damn bamboozled. There are a lot of us who don't want to talk about reparations and believe that we should get reparations. And some of them is just like some of us who back in our enslavement and after, you know, generations and maybe centuries, you know, we ain't gonna never be free. You know, we ain't gonna never be free. We tried to run away. Well, you know, we tried to fight, but we ain't gonna never. But then it happened, didn't it? And don't mistake, it happened because of us. It didn't happen because of some benevolence of Caucasians. It didn't happen because the people in the North were different than the people in the South. No, they're the same crackers. The only problem was they had two different economic mechanisms. Free labor economy of the South against the emergence of the industrialization of the North. And it couldn't happen on both of them. So they had to give one or the other. And of course, now, some people say, well, aren't you glad the North won? I don't give a damn if the North won or South won. Because to me, it's even more crippling when the enslavement of the mind happens. So you took those chains off our ankles and ass and put them on our mind. It's even worse when you make a people hate themselves and hate their culture, hate their traditions, hate their religion, hate their face, hate their hair, hate their nose. So no, they definitely don't want to hear from us. How dare you confront me with what I have done to you? How dare you? How dare you talk about my what I have done? You should be thankful. You should be thankful that I took you out of Africa and exposed you to Western. And there are some of our people who believe this. To this very day, I'm talking about right now, just recently, I'm glad, a politician, I think she was in Florida, thankful that my ancestors were taken out of Africa. Otherwise, I'd be worshiping a tree. Oh, she's also the one that is so steeped in Christian religion. That she wants to impose that those concepts on others. Man, oh man, our people are mentally sick. But there's nothing we can do, dear brothers and sisters. Nothing we can do to change crackers. We have to change ourselves. We have to fight hard to change ourselves. What I do every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern is to put something on our minds. It was what I was trying to do when I was back in Milwaukee working with our children. And believe me, that's who we need to be working with, because a lot of us old folks, we don't want to hear it. Hell, we got a mortgage and a car note, and I got a couple of kids in school. So I don't want to hear what the hell you got to say about some, man, I got to get this money. We don't understand how beautiful. I know it's a struggle, but Frederick Douglass says without struggle, there is no progress. It is a struggle. Life shows us it's a struggle. It's a constant struggle. Oh, we have a caller, 447. 447, good morning, or good afternoon, or good evening.
Yes, Brother Ochi, good morning to you. It's a good afternoon from the UK.
Hey, my brother, how you been, Paul?
Well, brother, I've been good, brother. Good. I always say, as long as I can breathe in the ear, as long as I can wake up from the day previous, then I can do better. And I'm always striving to do better.
That's right.
And improve on my situation.
That's
so
right.
The mere fact that I can make this call, the mere fact that I can interject across the sea, the mere fact that I can even articulate my position, I'm grateful, Brother Ochi. I'm grateful.
I hear you.
For those who came before us, our ancestors, my family, your family, our family, I'm grateful. So we can do better.
That's right.
And how are you?
And we strive every day to do so, brother. Believe me, I'm doing fine, man. I'm okay. You know, I'm doing fine. I try my best every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. or 5 o'clock by you now?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, from 4 to 6 by you. From 4 to 6, try my best to you know, elevate the consciousness of our people, to make us more aware and more cognizant of our situation, and help us love ourselves and love each other, you know? And that's what I try to do every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. That is my challenge to myself and for all of us to bring us to that level of consciousness. And it ain't easy, because really it should have been done. We've had ancestors that consistently told us about this, but we keep chasing this cracker. We keep chasing his methods, his ideas, you know, his concepts, and not understanding we need to develop ours. You know, it's tough.
Yes, sir, it's tough. I mean, you use the Paranam phrase cracker, and it makes me think of that substance they call purified cocaine, they call crack. Now, you know, if anybody who knows anybody who's addicted to crack or been on crack, you know, that is a hard job to get that person off of crack.
Right.
In actual fact, we can go as far as to say that in the end, that person has to do it for themselves, because no matter how much you talk to them, no matter how much you take them away from it, unless they're willing to take on that challenge for themselves, they ain't never going to come off that crack.
That's right.
And then we look at Dr. Jerome Fox, who talks about addicted to white.
Right.
And the five core values which he articulates, we are addicted to. So we are addicted to that crack, the cracker. Absolutely
Good point.
Addicted to that.
Good point.
So you know, sir, I totally agree when you say it's a hard job. But then there's a mantra which says any job worth doing is going to be a hard job.
Yeah.
If it ain't a hard job, then it's not worth doing, is it?
That's right.
Yeah. So that's the challenge we all face, Brother Ochi. We face this challenge, and it is a challenge. You know, just recently, I was dealing with a brother like myself, giving him the information, you know, giving more of the radio stations, which I interject with him, sharing everything, because that's what I know is the key to our success. You must share.
Right.
But you know what I find, Brother Ochi? You know, some of us, when we share, people take your kindness for weakness. Have you ever had that, my brother?
Oh, of course. Of course.
Well, absolutely. But I don't know if I should be saying this, but I'm going to say it because I like to talk the truth. You know, people make a big mistake when they take my kindness for weakness, because I can switch very quickly. You know, brother? I was grown up. You'd call it over there the project. We call it council estates, yeah? I was grown up in a council estate in East London. East London is a very hard neighborhood. You got some very, you know, most people when I grew up were white, they were working class and racist. So we had to basically fight our way out of that. So, you know, as much as I like to talk and put my best foot forward, I can switch when people take my kindness for weakness. And the reality of it is that sometimes when our people, they do take your kindness for weakness, no matter how you give them the leg up and you give them the step. And when you switch, they look at you like you've got the problem, when it's them with the problem.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying, my brother Ochi?
Yes. They have the problem.
It's them with the problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you're trying to help. You're trying to give them the leg up. You're trying to show them what they're under. You know, you're trying to bring them in a state of awakeness. And then they try and switch it around on you. And that's the reality of our situation. And I don't blame them 100%, because we're in this fish tank, this poison fish tank, this poison environment we're in.
Yeah.
And then that takes me to this, Brother Ochi. You know, I think, you know, I listen in attentively to what's going on with my family in the U.S., my immediate family and my extended family. You're my extended family. And I take notes. And I see that this so-called cracker has us in this divide and conquer.
That's his method.
Mode.
Right, that's his method.
Absolutely.
Continue to blame yourself and blame each other. Blame the victim. That's his method, yes.
And it's so successful. And I keep asking myself, why is it so successful? Why? Yeah? And I just come off the phone with another brother, the brother who phoned up here, Dr. Abu, on Galaxy 3 radio station. Just come off the phone to him. And he will always bang on about the effects of this religion called Christianity and Jesus, yeah? Mm-hmm. And I said to him, you know what? I think you got a point, Dr. Abu, because the reality of it is I keep asking myself the question, why is it so successful? And he says, well, we all believe in a jealous God. They all got them under a jealous God. And I have to accept that.
Yeah.
I have to accept that because I'm looking for the reason why these people, and they're just people, they eat, talk like me, mm-hmm. yeah, sleep. Why are they successful in this divide and conquer? They've actually got our minds under mass mind control. And that's what religion is, Brother Ochi.
That's right.
We can't ask me to say. And I know what, as I'm saying it, Brother Ochi, some people don't like what I'm saying. They don't like it.
I know they
because
don't.
Because they're so brainwashed. They're right. so into this mentality. They don't want to hear it. But it is. Religion is mass mind control.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. There's no truth to it. There's no historical truth to it. And that's the other thing. See, that's why, Brother Paul, the reason why in many times on this program, I've challenged Christianity openly because it purports itself. It says it's historical, but yet there's no historical facts to substantiate its claims, to substantiate Jesus and Joseph and Moses and all the other people, all the other situations. There's nothing there to substantiate that. But the real deal is because even though when you talk about it, you're talking about some people who would be in the area of the world that would be dark-skinned people, that would be melanated people. But yet Christianity, co-opted by Europeans, the face of all of these people is Caucasian.
Absolutely.
And they've imposed that on the world. They've imposed that on the world. And then
they've done it so successfully that among us, we're even scared to challenge this thing they call God. We're scared to even talk about it. It's as if you talk about it, you know, if you even challenge it, then you become demonized.
Right.
So what they're actually telling you, that you shouldn't exercise your critical mind or your ability to analyze anything. You should be just dumb and follow the leader like you're the mice in the Pied Piper game.
There you yeah? go.
I don't know if you're familiar with Pied Piper.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, exactly, right? So this is the reality of the dumb mess they've put us in for 500 years. So when you talk to your brother and you say, listen, man, that's fabricated. That's make-believe. That's like going to Disney World and following Mickey Mouse. They look at you like you got the problems. What's wrong with you? But it's not wrong with me. It's wrong what is right with me. I grew up, Brother Ochi, seeing this white man on my wall, and I was told to look at him as the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. Who is this white man? Serapis, mm-hmm. I'm told. Serapis. The cult of Serapis.
Right.
Yeah?
Exactly.
I know now.
Exactly. That's who it is. And then the face is one of Michelangelo's relatives. That becomes the iconic face. It changes a little bit. The eye color maybe from blue to brown. The hair color maybe from a darker color to a more brown color. But the facial features and the beard, all this image that they have of the Christ, of Jesus Christ, hasn't been indelibly imprinted on the minds of our people. And even though in church, I don't know about where you are, Brother Paul, but I know here, particularly here in Atlanta or in other parts of the states, particularly larger cities where we are, we may have a picture of a dark-skinned person as Christ. But the reality is that image, that Caucasian image, is in our minds. And there are some churches that don't want that image. Black. They're us. They're African. They're American African churches, because we're so damn brainwashed. We're so whitewashed. We're so Caucasianized. We've been so deeply infected with the Rugu virus. We have white-itis that we refuse to even put any images. That's why the nation, not the Nation of Islam, War of D. Muhammad, Elijah Muhammad's son, when he came in and they kind of dismantled the nation before Louis Farrakhan, Minister Louis Farrakhan, resurrected it. But right in between when his father died and when Minister Farrakhan resurrected, he was leading the people to Orthodox Islam, Sunni Islam. But he put, this is what he did, which I loved, he put out into the community, the African American African communities across the country, to take down any and every image of deity in your church. Because he knew the effects of that child going to Sunday school and looking at those books and going to church and seeing all these images. What did it do to him? Bishop Henry Turner McNeil said, he said, I believe that God is black. He's got to be black. Because if God is a white man, there is no hope. There is no hope. And of course, the image of the deity, the image of God, because they say that Jesus and the Father are one. And you can't come to Jesus, or to God, but through the Son, through Jesus. You can't come to God, but through Jesus. So if you don't believe in this particular doctrine, you are going to hell. Whether you're a Muslim, any other kind of Christian outside of that, Seventh-day Adventist, Mormon, da-da-da-da, nothing. The only way that you will go to heaven, if you believe that, is through Jesus Christ. The believing that Jesus Christ is Lord, announcing him as your Lord and Savior. That's the only way you'll get to heaven. That's what they believe. And I'm saying this false doctrine has done more to hinder us as a people than anything, because it's on our minds. And I know that our people in our enslavement was changing things around, just like Nat Turner, when he was reading the Bible, he saw us as opposed to, you know, did you get a chance to see the Nat Turner movie, Brother Paul?
You know, Brother Ochi, I haven't seen it. No, I haven't seen it. No.
Okay. Yeah, the Birth of a Nation. When you get a chance to check it out, you know.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Because.
But, you know, as you talk, what comes to mind, Brother Ochi, growing up here in London as a young man, we used to see, like, for instance, these, what it would be two young white boys walking with these black badges on. Do you know who I'm talking about?
No.
I'm talking about the Mormons, yeah?
Oh, those are the Mormons. Now, okay, no, I didn't know. Okay. The Mormons.
Yeah, yeah. You wouldn't know this. You wouldn't know this, but I'm just going to show you something, yeah? Now, from when I was a young boy growing up in the 70s to this day, you get used to be, most of the time, used to see two young white boys walking, and when they stop you, they got American accents. I mean, this is a regular thing that used to happen, you know, all through my growing up. You know, you might not see them for a year, you might not see them for two, but they were about. The point I'm trying to make is that they would send them from America, yeah, and in the 70s, they were the Mormons and the Jehovah's Witness.
Right.
You know, they exactly. Come knock on your door.
Exactly.
And it would be, they would have American accents, you know, they've obviously come from America. My point is, look how far they come to spread the message. So they bang on your door and try to enshrine you in the Bible. We call it the basic instructions before leaving England book. and try and indoctrinate you in the basic instructions before leaving England book. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So for some of us who had that intellect to challenge them, like myself, we'd invite them in, and then they want to leave after you start asking them what color's God, blah, 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 blah. Uh-huh. But the reality is, what I'm saying is how far they've traveled. All of a sudden, within the last few years, Brother Ochi, it was persistently two young men with the Mormons. I never see any black men, never see any black women. Until the last, say, 5 years, all of a sudden, you're starting seeing women. There was no women before, it was mainly men. Mm-hmm. And now you're seeing black women. I've seen on three separate occasions, never seen a black man represent the Mormons with this black badge. Mm. But over the years, I'm just trying to explain to you something, how far they stretch these things. Now, mm-hmm. even Jehovah's Witness now has got to the point now, you don't get the Americans come here anymore. That was in the 70s and early 80s, yeah? They don't come anymore because they've now set up their extension. So predominantly now, you find in the Jehovah's Witness, I've got two aunties, which are Jehovah's Witness. Majority of Jehovah's Witness, you drive in the morning, you will see at every train station, black women giving out Jehovah's Witness Watchtower books. Mm-hmm. No white people, just black women.
Mm.
Huh? This is now I've watched this progress. Yeah. Like I said, it used to be all white people with Jehovah's Witness. Now it's mainly black people and the new coming Africans who have been there for the last 10 years, a packed out overrun Jehovah's Witness and the Watchtower organization. And that's the reality right here in England. Let me tell you, Brother Ochi, you can go past any church. You don't even see white people in those churches. Let me tell you, you go past the Catholic Church. I've got a Catholic church at the bottom of my road. You don't even see white people in there, predominantly Africans in that church, Brother Ochi. Yeah? That's the reality here. Even the basic instruction before leaving England, so-called Bible, right? The white people are given up on, right? But yet the Africans are...
Yeah,
I know. That's the state of affairs right here in London.
And that's the state of affairs globally. That is what has happened. They have imposed a theology that they have conquered and created and manipulate and give to the masses of the world, which ties it to them, which makes one believe that my challenge to them would be like challenging God. By challenging them, I'd be like challenging my faith that I have acquired. My belief in my salvation is tied to them. All the while, they reap the benefits while I just pray and hope that when I die, you know, I'll go to a better place. I'll get mines in the by and by. I can't get it here on earth because there's a hell here on earth. But because of the theology that they have imposed upon me, it makes me understand that my reward will be given unto me when I expire, when I die. It's a damn shame that people believe this madness.
Let's not forget, right, the tithes they pay, right? And let your roof leak, or let you have a problem in your house, what you need to pay for. You can't even go to them and ask for no money.
No.
But yet you have to pay so much money into that criminal organization, yeah, called the church. Now, mm-hmm. you know, some must be wondering, why am I banging on about this? Yeah, because I have to come back to the point that we are severely under mass mind control. Yeah, that's why I appreciate that program you have on Wednesday with Brother Franklin, and you deal with the mind, because I think you've got it. You've got the key to the door. It's the mind is our problem. We are under severe mass mind control.
Yes, we are.
We need to be taken out of that mass mind control. And I think every time that we interject and we talk to each other and we communicate, we strengthen that power to remove ourselves from this programming. I don't know if you agree with me, brother.
Oh, no, I do. I wholeheartedly agree with you. I'm serious about it. That's why I do this, because I say it all the time. What is this program about? This program is about independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. So that means is that our minds have to be right. You can't think about being independent and self-determining and liberated and sovereign without your mind being right. So no, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, that's what I'm trying to do, to put something on our minds to get us to think, to purge ourselves of the ignorance and self-doubt and hatred that we have, to begin to believe in who we are and to love and respect one another, to willing to work with one another. And not just in here in Atlanta or Georgia or United States, but globally on the continent and throughout the diaspora. That's what I work for.
You know, Barocha, I'm going to say this last thing here, and this comes to mind. I hope nobody's not offended by this. You know, part of failure, part of a person's failure is not recognizing their success. Yeah. Do you understand where I'm coming from, Barocha?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, what I'm saying is that if you are a so-called African-American and you've never left America, you wouldn't really understand how the world sees you. You would only have an opinion. You wouldn't really understand. If you're a traveled man, or you've been to Africa, or you've been to other continents, you will get a view how you're looked at. And that would be called an optimistic view as opposed to, you know, a subjective view. Now, what I'm saying is that the way I'm looking at it when I analyze this, Brother Ochi, is that the so-called African-American, these achievements in terms of the black people's struggle has been very successful in many ways. But sometimes when I listen to various platforms, I don't think that success is really recognized in terms of influence. So let me give you an example of what I'm trying to say, Brother Ochi.
Okay.
For instance, I grew up on hip-hop music, yeah? Both my brother and myself were successful in certain areas. For instance, I used to make music. I had a clothing line based around hip-hop. My brother won two national awards. He used to work at the BBC.
Wow. Okay.
For graphic design, and that came from graffiti.
Right.
So we took the positive, and I can name not lots of people. I can name so many people who benefited from hip-hop music, yeah, and so-called African-American culture. Absolutely benefited. Mm-hmm. I've got a whole book of them. But I don't think that those recognize how others have really benefited. No, we didn't, just because we listened to NWA, we didn't take up a gun and start selling drugs and shoot one another. No, we recognized what they were saying. We recognized that it was a voice they had. It was a voice they had where they might not have had because they come from the street and no one was really listening. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So some of what they were saying wasn't happy to the ears.
Right.
Yeah. But we understood it. Understand? We didn't influence us to take up a gun and start jacking people, robbing people and stuff like that. No. Yeah. Some weaker minds may have done it, but majority of us didn't do it.
Right.
All of my friends involved in those areas, none of them did nothing like that. None of them. Yeah. They're very successful people. So, you know, the type of music I hear you play sometimes, my father is the same age as you and it's amazing. My, you know, I say my father comes from Jamaica and grew up in this country, but obviously, because you're the same age, he plays. If I mention names like Funkadelic,
yeah.
If I mention names like James Brown,
yeah.
Mark Maceo Parker.
Yep.
I'm sure that's your type of music.
You know it is, and you know it is
because. Sorry.
Hello. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is that, you know, we must not ignore this. What I'm trying to explain here is the reason why it's not just the fact that you're the same age as my father. It's the fact that the music has been a communicating force. So probably at the same time, you and my father was listening to the same music, although you've never met. Although
right.
You're in America, he comes from Jamaica, and he's grown up in the UK. You right. Understand what I'm saying to you?
Exactly.
So we must recognize these successes. We must and stop putting down these people because we have a way of putting down our people. You know, finding all the faults and not looking at the bigger picture is what I'm trying to say to Brother Ochi.
Mm-hmm.
And it saddens me sometimes. It saddens me the way I hear African Americans talk about hip hop because they really, most of them don't know about hip hop. When I lived in New York, I was getting mixtapes from a brother called, forget his name now, Africa, when I was in New York, because mm-hmm. remember, I got family in New York.
Right.
Yeah, so when I came back to this country, I was one of the first persons to bring hip hop here. Yeah, so I've grown in it. Mm. So I get kind of disheartened when I hear people talk about, and I don't think they really understand what it's really about. I don't think they understand how many people it saved. I don't think they understand the message it brought. Not everybody took the so-called non-progressive
exactly.
message.
Exactly.
Some people took the progressive
message. But see, that's the thing though, Paul. What happened, it was co-opted by the music industry. Co-opted by European Jews and dominated and controlled
yes.
by them. Because when I was first listening to hip hop, and you're right, I'm an older brother. I'm old school. I loved the music from the late 60s and or the mid 60s all the way into the 70s. I loved that music. But in the 80s, in the early 80s, I started listening to hip hop and I loved the message. I loved the consciousness of a KRS-One, X-Clan. You know, I love Sister Soulja. I never forget, Paul. I will never forget at our firefighter training program down in New Orleans, Louisiana. I'm in that area where at Dillard University, where they were selling like the gift shop, and they had the radio on. I think it was on NPR. But anyway, Sister Soulja was talking about how this change is going to happen, where they're going to
tried to eliminate all conscious rap and hip hop to this gangster thuggish rap and hip hop, you know, which has caused many of our young men to behave in a misogynistic and greedy and selfish way, you know. So, I mean, to me, I understand clearly what you're saying, and we need to have that transformation. Paul, before you respond, let me take this call. Caller 502. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Brother Oshi.
Hey,
Sister Sammy here.
Sister Sumi, how are you? You're on the line with myself, and you've got Brother Paul from across the way. Hey, Brother Paul, Sister Sumi just got back from Botswana.
Good afternoon. Good morning to you, Sister. Good morning. I hope you had a good trip.
I did. I had a good trip, Brother Paul. Thanks for your input on this call, and Brother Oshi. I had to step in here. I didn't think I'd chime in, but I just couldn't hold myself and felt the need to just really reiterate what you're both saying, and partly because of the experience I just had when I was back home and continue to have. We all have these experiences, but I'll tell you, I agree with Brother Paul. We cannot keep quiet on these matters, because what the Europeans did when they invaded us, the most evil thing they continue to do is train our people to take over that job, which is why they start off with, you know, as far as mission work or whatever they call it, with just them doing it, and eventually it's our people who've taken over, like Brother Paul was saying. I'll tell you what happened when I went home this time. I have a very close family member, brother, actually. Have to be careful, because I'm actually in his wife's house right now. Anyways, it's okay.
We have you better to be careful. That's things, right.
You know, and I have spent years, every time I go home, that's who I stay with. Every time. In the last 5 years or so, they decided to follow the snatch in Nigeria. And everything changed. You know, the last time I was in 2014, that's all I was going to be talking. You know, the conversation was only going to be about religion, Christianity, and the television was only this guy on television. And I had to just say, you know what? This is abuse and an assault on another person, especially when you try to kindly say, I don't want to hear about this.
It's brainwashing. Yes. It's whitewashing.
It is. But I'll tell you what, I think the most important is, our reaction to it has to be firm. We cannot compromise on this. So what I did was I literally said, you know what? If this, you know, this is your home, I respect it, but I'm going to have to move on. And I moved to the hotel. This time I went, he expected me to stay with him. And I didn't even tell him when I was arriving, I stayed with other family members. This is how serious I feel we should take. You know, we should start right in our homes a lot of times, because they will not shut their mouth. Once they start, they go on, and they'll look for an opportunity to just impose it and just shove it down your throat. I just have never seen anything like this. It's gotten worse, I believe. And then I stayed with another family member that were Catholic, young couple, great couple, really trying their best to be African. But as soon as they had the news about the Catholic priest, I wasn't following the news when I was there. I think I mentioned it to you, Brother Oshi. I just really tried to be, you know, in the moment while I was there. But he got upset because they were talking about the molestation that was ongoing with the Catholic priest. And he said, well, other people molested kids, and they only talk about Catholics. But now it's probably not happening in Botswana, because now they're all local people who've taken over. You know, they don't have as many of the Irish and whoever was there. The priest when we were growing up. So that's one case. You know, I'm saying these things to really just say I fully agree with, you know, what you and Brother Paul are saying, and I think we have to act immediately and shut them up, because we cannot be a part of enslaving the minds of our people. And if we don't start right there with our family and friends, that's how we continue to remain in the situations that we're in. So I just wanted to share. Oh, I have got to mention this. Are you there, Brother Oshi and Brother Paul?
Come on, Sister Sumi. Yes, we are here.
I have to share this one because it's so fresh. I met a lady. I call them anti-Africans. I don't even think they're Africans, really, because that's how blatant and hateful they are towards African people. I met her on the Ghana trip that I took in July, in June. So we just stayed in touch. She doesn't live too far. She's in Virginia and not too far from where I am now. But anyhow, so she called me a couple of days ago because she knew I had gone to Botswana. While we were in Ghana, she mentioned something about, oh, she liked to pray and we had to pray. And she is a Hebrew Israelite. And I'm not too familiar with them. You know, I know from Sunni Islam to the Nation of Islam to Christian Catholic. I've got a sister who's a Jehovah's Witness, so I pretty much know all, you know, all the other ones.
Mm-hmm.
And so I ignored the prayer thing when we're in Ghana. But then we got back to the U.S. and, you know, stayed in touch. 2 days ago, she called, how are you doing? And I know you're back. And then I just mentioned, yeah, you know, it's a little bit, the travel is a lot. And she said, you know, I've been thinking about you when, you know, prayer. She went on about prayer. I couldn't believe this woman. You know, then she went on about the importance of prayer and you needed to be more people. I just hung up and, I mean, because first I thought maybe I should talk to her about, you know, how I really feel assaulted when people start just assuming.
Right, they're just imposing.
Yeah,
well, see, sister,
I mean,
assuming.
I mean, they'll just show up and start praying.
Sister, assuming. Sister, assuming.
Yeah, so I just hung up and then I just blocked her up because I thought, you know what? She knew when we were in Ghana, we kept talking about the white Jesus we saw everywhere.
Right, everywhere.
And I was very vocal about it.
Yeah.
I was very vocal about it. And for her to continue to, you know, to now talk to me about participating in some prayer, and I just hung up. I thought, you know, I'm not going to waste my time on these people. And the last thing I did with this brother that I was always very close to, this is not an easy thing, but I feel good that I'm at the point where I'm just not going to take it. He came to visit me because I found a place where I could have peace, just be by myself in the village. And I knew, and I had told him, I don't want anybody preaching to me. I've told everybody, I don't want sermons because I don't believe in any of that. He came, acted like he wasn't going to, and before he left, he started. And I said, you know what? You're going to have to stop it. You know, this is a younger brother, a few years. I said, I don't want to hear about it.
So
he
assuming.
Said, well, what about you? What's your religion? And I said, listen, but that's the point. I couldn't, because this is just delicate sometimes when it comes to relationships, because the next step is I'm going to have to say exactly why I do not want to be involved in the discussion with him specifically. And he's not going to like it, but I don't have a choice.
Sister Susumi.
We just have to be blatant about it.
Sister Susumi, the problem is that these are proselytizing religions. The main two is Islam and Christianity. They seek converts. The Black Hebrew Israelites have been seeking converts as well. I see them very prevalent here in Atlanta. Just about a month or so ago, you had a number of them marching. It was on the internet in their purple T-shirts and so forth. Against something, I don't remember, maybe some type of brutality or whatever. And people were pretty impressed by that. But I'm not impressed by an indoctrination that looks unfavorably on us as African people. I'm not, you know, what was brought out just even recently was that there's that belief because of these religions that we, as African people, as dark-skinned people, as people with close-curled hair and broad nose and big lips, are cursed. We're cursed.
Exactly, because we're the children of, so-called the children of Ham.
Exactly. That we're cursed.
I don't believe that bullshit.
Even,
Brother Oshia, I'm so sorry to that. I don't even, you know, get excited about talking about the fact that they stole all these from Kemet.
Right.
To me, that's irrelevant now because it has been used as a weapon against our people. So, you know, to go there just gives everybody an excuse to continue their evangelizing,
mm-hmm.
using their method of, you know, belief. And it's the most dangerous, I mean, to turn the other cheek, to not stand up for yourself, forgive everybody, to love your enemies. Because I told them I said, I don't love everybody. I don't love my enemies. I don't love anybody who hates African people. That's for sure. And that's not going to change. And I'm not going to forgive everything. There's some things that are just not forgivable, like what African people have had to endure at the hands of of Europeans. You know, so anyways, but I appreciate it. I mean, this is a subject that to me has really helped me get stronger, but it's one that I feel, because we've got close family members, we've got friends, often we have people, you know, there's a tendency to allow it, and then it doesn't stop.
Well, you know,
then we're just all accepting it.
I have my my brother, who I consider a theologian, because he knows the Bible front and back. He has a church and everything like that. But he don't mess with me. Because, see, he's coming with a narrative of faith. I'm coming with a narrative based on facts, history, and so forth. And so, you know, I respect him, and I know he respects me, you know. And they understand that I'm a challenge their Christianity, and the reason I challenge it is because not only do they want to impose it, but they want to say it's historical. And as somebody who loves history, particularly our history, it is not. And so that's why when they impose it, they want to put like us in it, but in it, we are subservient.
Absolutely, yeah.
We are subservient in it. To them, because it is there. It is what they have imposed upon the world. And so we seek, because they impose it upon the world, we seek salvation in it, because we've been trained to believe that if we do believe this, then we will have salvation. The world is corrupt, it's bad, it's evil. There's nothing we as human beings can do about it. And so the only thing we could do is believe that Jesus Christ will come one day and we will be saved. They impose that bull on humanity. Because I was watching a piece the other day and seeing these folks in Southeast Asia, I don't know if it was the Philippines or if it was Indonesia, whipping themselves with chains, you know, breaking the flesh. In the Philippines one time, the Christianity, some of the people were willing to be crucified. They were willing to be literally crucified on a cross. This is sickness. This is madness. And then when you talked about the priesthood in Catholicism and how, you know, see, I look at it this way, Sister Susumi and Brother Paul, these men did not have a religious calling. These men were pedophiles. And these men knew that they could have exposure and have opportunity for their ugly, selfish fetishes, their sexual fetishes. And so,
brother,
go ahead, Paul.
Sorry. No, sorry to interrupt you. You know, I just want to bring this to your attention. You know, being here in the UK and looking at this question and looking at the history, let me just give you some facts. You know, when the so-called founding fathers arrived in America, yeah, there was a big debate about what book they should have as the holy book. And you know, it was 100 years before the so-called King James Bible was introduced into America. There was about 258 different versions of the so-called Bible. Now, I want you to just bear with me and use the basic instruction, the acronym, the basic instruction before leaving England. Because that's what it is. It's a book which is created by Englishmen, okay, right, to save them on their voyages across the sea, right? Because the people you live with, the people who dominate you, they are white Anglo-Saxon Protestant. They are cousins of these people I live with. They're the English. So that's why they pushed this book. Right, because as you rightfully say, Brother Oshie, they have put us at the feet of everybody else in this book. Let me give you another fact, right? You've heard of this man called Shakespeare, haven't you?
Yep. He has
But did you know that man never existed? You know that's a complete fabrication. Did you know that?
Didn't know that.
No, you didn't know that. That is an absolute fabrication. Nobody existed like that. Okay? Right? Now,
Let me give you another one. Sherlock Holmes. You know this character called Sherlock Holmes?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yes.
You know that's a complete fiction. A
yes.
Complete
I do know
fabrication,
that.
Fabrication, don't you?
I do know that. Okay. William Tell, Robin Hood, King Arthur, all of them are fictional characters.
Right. Well, I'm just trying to point you something, right? William Shakespeare is a complete fictional character, and they sell it, and I no doubt know, I actually know, without even doing the research, that they have it in the curriculum, probably in most American schools, as this person who existed, who wrote all these poems. Well, he didn't exist. He absolutely didn't exist, right? So this is how they've sown information for us. We are absolutely indoctrinated, Brother Oshie, with their BS. We've absolutely been totally brainwashed, okay? And that's the state we find ourselves in. So people like, you know, our sister, yourself, we are the ones who are woke, and we have to wake up the rest. And I think, you know, I'm thinking as you talk, you know, you talk about Africa, but we have to have a strategic plan to go back to Africa to start to de-brainwash our people.
Radically.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. That has got to be our mission. I think this is crucial. We need that a whole lot more than skills. I maintain that the skills, yes, we can use more skills on the continent, but we need people like ourselves who are willing to go and start up schools with children and just go for it and start doing what needs to be done and any other means necessary to wake up our people. I mean, they need to be shaken up in a way that they'll never forget. I think we need to come up with methods that'll just kind of shake them up so hard that they don't have a choice except to see the reality in which they find themselves.
Well, the imposition.
So, but I really appreciate the forum, and thanks, Brother Paul and Brother Oshie.
Thank you, Sister Susumi. Thank you so much. I appreciate it, and I'm glad that you listened. I'm glad you're back home. I mean, not back home. I'm glad you're back in the States for a minute. I know you're going to go back.
Home. And this time for a long time. I'll be needing all the help I can get. With those young ones, we need to get them out of that mindset.
That's for sure.
Take them back.
That's for sure.
Take them back. Thank you.
All right. I appreciate that, Sister Susumi and Brother Paul. I thank you, too, for helping make this program today. And I wish
Brother Oshie.
Yes. Go ahead.
Can you give what I'm going to do? I'm going to give you, well, I'll email you. Can you pass on my contact details to the sister? Yeah.
Yes, I will do that.
I would really appreciate that, Brother Paul. Would really appreciate. I have Brother Oshie's information, so I'd love to have yours as well. It's as many people that we can get on board to do this work, I think would be great.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Absolutely. I was sure.
Well, I'm going to bail out. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak. And, you know, to everybody who's listening, you know, just keep walking strength and power.
Right on, my dear brother. Have a blessed and wonderful weekend, Paul. Have a great weekend, Sister Susumi. I will check with y'all next week because I'll be back here on Monday.
Thank you.
All right. Peace to you. Peace.
Peace.
Ah, beautiful. I appreciate this program. I still wanted to get off into that Dr. D'Angelo piece on Caucasian fragility, but hey, I'm going to get to that, and you know that I will. I really appreciate Sister Susumi and Brother Paul and their contribution to this program to deal with the issues that are affecting African people. Brothers and sisters, we end this program. Well, first let me say, Monday's program, I got Brother Tejumala Olaboni, a multidisciplinarian. This brother is one of the most talented men that I know. You're not going to want to miss this program of great insight. Brother Tejumala Olaboni, Brother Teju on the program this Monday. I can't wait. Also, too, brothers and sisters, check out the blog talk today. And that is my good brother Yosef Muhammad's program, Disaster Awareness for Community Preparedness. And that's from 4 to 6 Eastern Time. And the number to call is 563-999-3089. We end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind, but not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they don't want to pay for it. Brothers and sisters, Shemhotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Abibi Fahodio means our victorious victory, our victorious destiny. Abibi Fahodio.